This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the Republic of New Africa. Should the states of Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina be turned over to the black man? Tonight's guest, Milton Henry, who calls himself the first vice president of the New Republic of Africa. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-4300. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. The Republic of New Africa, in an announcement from its headquarters in Washington, D.C., has demanded that the United States pay the new nation $400 billion in reparations for 300 years of black American slavery. This new country would be carved out of the southeastern United States, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, and turned over to black Americans. New Africa is a bit more than a dream. Its leaders are a group of dedicated blacks who have set up a government in exile, complete with the president, Robert F. Williams, living in Tanzania, a first vice president, Milton Henry, and an entire cabinet. Standing by in Detroit, Michigan, is our Night Call guest, Mr. Vice President Milton Henry, an attorney who served 6 years on Detroit City Council and lost a close congressional election to John Conyers. He says that, and we quote, like the Jews moving into Israel, we will start to organize along the lines of cooperative and collective farms, unquote. Of course, this sort of destroys the idea of one nation, united and indivisible. Mr. Henry, good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you, Mr. Shields?
Fine, thank you, and thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
Mr. Henry, what are the demands of the Republic of New Africa?
Well, the demands are simple. The Republic of New Africa wants land and power. And, of course, the land that we look to is the land within the United States, the five states of Louisiana, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, and South Carolina. And we want the United States government to transfer, to relinquish, in fact, its sovereignty over that land, transfer it to us, and work out an acceptable arrangement for reparations which will make possible the acquisition of all the plants and all the instrumentalities that are presently there. That is, all the schools, the television stations, all of the things which presently exist there, transfer that over to the Republic of New Africa so that we can solve the problems which black people face in the United States. And it's our conviction that by only through this method can black people really acquire freedom, the kind of opportunity to control their own lives which people should want, the ability to settle all the problems of unemployment, underemployment, the basic inherent racism of this awful system, to be able to plan our lives for 500 or 600 years ahead and be pretty well assured that we'll have an opportunity to realize our dreams, you see. And we don't believe that within the existing framework that any of these problems will be solved. So basically, that's what we want. We just want land and power. And, of course, that means the right to make our own laws, issue our own money, enter into relationships with other people throughout the world of a new kind, help to make a new and better society, as we say, in a new and better world.
You say you would like for the United States to do this, but what legal authority are you using?
Well, it's the basic legal authority which has always existed in international law. How did the United States itself come into being? It was, in fact, a part of the English Empire. And what did they do? They decided that the people here had a right to govern their own lives, and they went ahead and said, we declare our independence, and they then took the necessary steps to make that independence real. The same thing if you look at the problem in the Sudetenland. Always no government has the right to govern except with the consent of the governed. When you had the question of Czechoslovakia and the Germans, they arguing over who was entitled to the Sudetenland, they said, well, let's have a plebiscite, let's see. And you always have to look to the consent of the governed. Always the question is whether a people who are subject to a government, in fact, have given their consent to that government. That's the only legitimate basis in law upon which any government can exercise authority over the lives of the individual. With black people, of course, we're non-self-governing people held captive within the territorial limits of the United States. We're subjects of the United States. We have no real power, no real authority within the United States. If we really analyze our situation, we have to recognize the fact that people who, when you're talking in terms of sharing any kind of power, take the political power, how in the hell could we possibly be considered people who are sharers of political power when you look at the Congress of 453 or so folks, and nine of them are black? Now, obviously, those nine black people can't have any real substantial power in realizing the gains and aims of a whole nation of folk. You look at the economic situation in the United States. When you talk in terms of economic power, where do we stand along the ladder? The truth of the matter is that we don't stand anywhere. In terms of an industrial might, you look at that. Where are we there? An industrial nation, a nation of machines, a world that's built upon technology, where do we stand in the whole thing? We don't stand. The truth of the matter is that in a land that has to do with machines, in a world that moves on machines, we don't even get near the machine. You look at the craft unions that systematically go about excluding black boys from participation in the manipulation of these machines. And I don't care whether that comes down to the simplest thing of a plane or a saw in the carpentry unions, but you go through the electrical up to the tinsmiths and all of the others, the systematic discrimination which exists so that we have today an unemployment rate for youngsters in the teenage bracket, which is seven times higher than that for whites. We have a steadily decreasing comparative annual wage when we compare our annual wage with that of the whites. The whites constantly going up. Ours is constantly falling and lagging behind. We have no possibility of entering into the great financial decisions that this country makes. And even if we could, you see, in a real sense, when we recognize that we are part of greater Pan-Africa, that we are Africans, that we have come to this country with a terrible, tragic history in back of us, that we've been utilized and used by white folks for their benefit, and that the world is in that same spot, that we should join with other people in the world of color to try to rid the world itself of racism, to change the relationships among men in the world. And when you look at that, then black people ought to realize that their common destiny, the demand for the return to sanity in this world requires that they separate themselves from this monstrous U.S. and get out and have their own government in which they can begin to try to plan for a decent world. And we basically recognize the inherent intractability of the system. The system has no interest in changing itself fundamentally. There are some things that you could point to and say, well, black folks are going into this industry or being hired there or being integrated, as it were, into the structure. But the real truth of the matter, as to our condition, comes when we look at what do we produce? How do we enter into the affairs of the world when we don't produce a damn thing? When we, in fact, as a nation of people, have as much money going through our hands as the whole nation of Canada has going through, and we don't produce anything, we're just buying this man's thing. We say, no, it's got to stop. It can't go on. And the only answer is, as Brother Malcolm said, the land. For land is, in truth, the basis upon which we have freedom, justice, independence, and equality. And that's what we want. We want those things.
You see the Republic of New Africa is actually solving the race problem here in America?
The only possible way that the race problem can be solved is for black people to have land and independence. That's the only answer. This country would be a freak in the history of the world if it were able to work out the kind of society which they've suggested by their myths that they have. Of course, it's been a myth because black folks have never really been included within the thinking of any of the people who are the architects of this government. In truth, you know, when the lawyers look back on it, we know that within the framework of the very Constitution that people study every day, we were not included. How could you have a document so racist that it looks on us as three-fifths of a man, number one? How could you have a document which by its terms acknowledges the existence of the slave trade and promises, it, as it did, that it would not interfere with that slave trade prior to 1808? How could you have a document which precluded a whole group group of people who were not recognized citizens by the framers of that document, which excluded them from the courts and therefore excludes them from the possibility of having anything to do the protection of the incidents of their life. How could you have any black man in this country, saying black man, thinking in terms of that document, thinking about them, when you had a full faith and credit clause, which today we say has to do with the enforcement of a North Carolina decree in New York, but then meant that the slave owner could enforce his pernicious rights, which existed under the law, his registration rights over the slave and over my life. He could enforce that in New York or Boston. It wouldn't make any difference. Such a document, obviously, when looked at in proper light, it lets black people know that we were not within the contemplation, the thinking of these rascals who formed and framed this government for themselves. And moreover, black people ought to recognize that one of the fundamental things that government is supposed to do is to protect the rights of the individual, his life and the incidents of life. And it has never done that for black people. The next thing it ought to do is assure the vote. And it has never done that for black people. Now, I'm of course, a person born in this country, and I would like very much to find that the situation were otherwise. But I have to look at it and analyze it as it is, to try to determine what is my estate, what is my actual condition. And when I look at what is supposed to be, then I have to throw the miss out, because I know that so far as I am concerned, I have not been assured these benefits of citizenship. All that this government has ever done is impose duties upon me, and that it would do to a subject. And yet when I look around this country's whole relationship with every other group of people, they have a different attitude. When they went to Samoa, they could deal with the Samoans and enter into treaties because they knew you weren't supposed to just run over folks. When they went into the Philippines, they developed a certain peculiar type of status for the Philippines. When they went down into Puerto Rico, they did the same thing. When they deal with the Indian, who they found here, they talk in terms of reparations to him for the wrong which was done. But when it comes to me, then they summarily treat with me and refuse to deal with me as an individual who has had rights that have been despoiled, who's had a life that's been despoiled, who's had a whole race that's been despoiled, who's had a continent that's been despoiled. And then I'm supposed to take some hope that that same government, which continues even down to this day, to refuse to enforce the right to vote. For example, we have Strom Thurmond coming out of South Carolina representing people down there, dictating even to the president-elect about what should be done. Doubtless will have something to do with the Supreme Court justice. Doubtless has had a great deal already to do, more than he ought to, with the selection of judges that have to do with how I'm going to live. And I say that this kind of government, no, it's got to change. And I don't feel that, and I don't think any intelligent person could feel, that in fact, this government has shown the proper approach towards a large minority of its people who've been here and been subjected to a community of suffering, an overwhelming community of suffering, which continues on to this very hour. And they go on and they play games with us and try to make us just keep quiet and be quiet. And I think black people have to reach the point where they have a greater vision than that. When they want to control their own lives and really want to enter into a relationship with the rest of the world on a decent basis, where they stand up on their own 2 feet, where they're able to plot their economic course, where they're able, even if it will, to have the strength to throw off tyranny right then and there. And this is why we say that there must be a separation. We can't go ahead with these folks the way they've been going. Now, the next thing that's important is for us to realize, of course, is that there has never been any successful biracial government anywhere in the history of the world that has ever worked. This is one of the reasons why the Irish were over there fighting the English, getting the English off them. Right now, up in Northern Ireland, they're fighting now because they don't want the domination of this Protestant group. You look in the Scots are yelling. You look up here in Canada, the French Canadians are yelling. They want to be separated. And this is the case, all the Catalan people over there in the eastern side in Spain, they want to be separated. And then you take India and Pakistan. Why was it that these two people had to separate? They had to separate because intelligently they realized that their two destinies were a little different and separate. And it's like Brother Malcolm said, now how in the world can two groups of people sit in a country? Here we are occupying this same land. We're fighting with each other from morning to night. We haven't had moments of peace. I know I haven't in all of my 49 years. I haven't had a moment's peace in this country, and I've wanted to be peaceful. I've wanted to be nonviolent. I've wanted to be pleasant, and yet I haven't had that opportunity. And how in the world are we going to sit here and knock the windows out of this house? And knock the doors off. As Brother Malcolm says, we are untruthful when we do this sort of thing. And under those circumstances, the only thing to do is get a divorce. And that's where we are right now. Now, they can talk in terms of this country being one country. But I guess England thought that too, when these people below the Canadian border decided they wanted to separate. Now, we're the ones who make the choice. It's not up to white people. It's up to black people to decide what their destiny shall be.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation is the Republic of New Africa. Should the states of Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina be turned over to the black man? And our guest tonight is Mr. Milton Henry, who calls himself the first vice president of the Republic of New Africa. He's calling in from Detroit, Michigan. And right after station identification, we'll begin taking calls from our Night Call listeners. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Milton Henry of the Republic of New Africa after station identification.
What do I really want? Well, the same things any man wants, black or white. I want a decent job. The same chance as any man to better myself, to get ahead. I want a home my wife won't be ashamed of. I want our kids to grow up as proud of being black as of being American. I want to be able to give them what they want, and maybe a little extra. If I don't get all the things I want, it should be because I failed, pure and simple, not because I'm black. I want nothing more than anyone else, but nothing less either.
It isn't easy to get by in the city these days, for blacks or whites. Our cities need help, your help. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder. Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to guest Milton Henry, who calls himself the first vice president of the Republic of New Africa and says black Americans should be given as their own country five of the southern United States. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
Mr. Henry, there were a number of questions we wanted to set to you, but we wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of set your platform, so we'll try to get our questions in, as we will also accept calls from our Night Call listeners. So let's take our first call tonight from Indianapolis, Indiana. Mr. Finkelstein is hearing Night Call over WTLC-FM. Mr. Finkelstein?
Yes.
Good evening.
Mr. Henry?
Yes.
First, if I could, just take a minute. I'd like to say a word to Del Shields. Del, we had a reverend from Detroit on last night who was really getting into the substance of a pretty good discussion. And even though station break time did come along, couldn't it have been continued past station break time?
Well, it's kind of a thing of judgment on my part. We had extended to him. I think he'd been on for something like 7 or 8 minutes. And we were fearful of getting into a discussion on biblical theory, because our discussion last night was not on the Bible, but was in terms of Bishop Pike's theory on afterlife. And we just didn't want to go into that area. We didn't want to be rude in any way, but we had a number of calls standing by, and we were constantly being harassed. I shouldn't say harassed, but our producers are consistently complaining to us about giving too much time to the various listeners, because the idea is to try to accept as many calls as possible.
Sure, I understand that problem, but I wonder if it isn't just as important sometimes to get down to the real area of discussion. I think that probably a few more minutes would have closed that discussion. They could have gotten to the point where they could have gotten to the substance of the thing.
Well, I would like for you to do this, if you'd be kind enough to drop us a note so that we can pass it on to our producers, and perhaps they'll allow us a little more freedom to spend a little bit more time with our Night Call listeners.
Sure, I could see how in some areas it's only worth 2 or 3 minutes, but other areas it would be advantageous to carry on a little longer.
Well, you're perfectly right, and I thank you for your observation.
Thank you for your consideration of that thought. Mr. Henry?
Yes?
I find myself in a good deal of sympathy with disagreement.
Mm-hmm. That's bad.
Well, because I disagree with you, that's bad. Thank
yeah.
you. My relationship to Negroes are vastly more numerous than to whites. And I find that many of them have found their niche, whatever level you care to put it in. I certainly feel that some of the good men in their positions are superior to mine. And
now how are you judging that?
Well, by the only way I can judge.
You mean by the amount
assessment.
Of money they're making, is that what you're
Pardon
saying?
Me?
Well, that, of course, is
by
a
money?
Little...
By money? No, not by money.
Oh, well, what else?
Well, whatever that niche, whatever it means to you and whatever it means to me, all of these factors combined. But, you know, I've met Negro waterworks owners in Mississippi, and we have people who are successful in every area, and then we have people who are not so successful like myself. And I wonder, did you think this generalization of this idea that you're expounding tonight, did you think that these were kind of original with you or Malcolm X?
Of course not. You must recognize that this is the most fundamental drive for people in all the world. Everybody wants to have their independence, and it's always been the case. That's how nations, you know, originally were initiated. There's nothing unusual about this drive, and it certainly hasn't been unusual for us here in the United States. As you know, or you should be aware, certainly the separatist thinking has existed among black people for a number of times. There were any number of black people who wanted to leave this country because they saw that this country just wasn't going to change in any material way. But certainly the modern-day separatism is the sort of thing which perhaps owes its existence to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Marcus Garvey and to a few other people. But there's nothing unusual about it. But when white people try to sit down and tell me that we're crazy or there's something wrong with us wanting to run our own government, when every government that exists in the world today has been the product of white people deciding that they couldn't be ruled by somebody else and setting the boundaries for their particular land and going about it to make certain that those boundaries could be made real. Now, it's ridiculous for them to try to pull the wool over my eyes like that.
Well, sir, I understand that there is a good bit of wool being pulled over your eyes, but however, I prefer to think that I've gone a few steps further with this thing than you have in the thinking or analysis. Now, not that I...
Well, why then are the Zionists over there in Israel? What then motivated them to decide that they wanted to set up a nation? And what was it then that drove them out of Eastern Europe? And what was it that started, for example, Moses Hess back in 1862, writing the little pamphlet that he wrote, Rome and Jerusalem, and the thing which drove right down to 1948 when Israel came into being? Dr. Wiseman and all of the others that came out to say they wanted land. Why is it then that our aim and our desire is so different from that? Why wasn't it wrong for the Jew, but it's wrong for us?
It's right for any people
to want land to control their own lives.
Well, I'm not saying it's wrong. However, the area of choice is a little peculiar.
The area of choice is where it should be.
There's 50 or 60% Negro population in this area now. I mean,
who else in this world? The Jews couldn't claim by right the Palestinian area. We claim by right this area that we insist upon. We worked that land. We came here and we developed that land. Plus the fact, there isn't a single thing that exists in this nation today that doesn't owe its existence. The financial structure, the mercantile structure, the industrial life of this nation owes its existence to the push that it got from slavery. And therefore, if there is anybody in this world who has to get out of their land, it's these Americans. Not some other group of people anywhere in the world, but Americans.
Would you let me talk a minute?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not going to let you hoodwink me with something that this is what white people have been doing all along.
There's no sense in you, attempting to tell me that I'm hoodwinking you.
You're trying to.
Than me to tell you that I'm that you're hoodwinking me.
No, I'm not hoodwinking you because what I mean, and I'm serious about it. Well, you can think anything you want and tell us anything. We are not going to change our objective. We are going to acquire five of those states now, whether white people like it or not. We'd like to do it peacefully.
Then you're expounding a theory. You're not open to discussion then.
Yes.
The slavery issue has caused over 100 years has really caused a hindrance to the economic growth of this country. It's hurt, Even up until the last 10 or 15 years, it's hurt.
I'd suggest you read Eric Williams' book on capitalism and slavery, and I won't even argue that point.
Well,
that's ridiculous. This country's entire economic base sprang from the existence of slavery.
Well, I don't think it got any place with because of it. I think it was a total economic loss.
Oh, total economic loss when a man could take a ship for $35,000 and come back after one voyage and after one voyage with $350,000 when I, in fact, grew the cane and the cotton out of which the New England ship manufacturers had built their business on it, the New York bankers financing the slave industry, the whole bit.
Just like you would automobiles today,
the rum manufacturers up there in New England, and then take the ship over, and then you process the cotton into the finished goods and sell that all around the world. You and the mother country engaged in a little conspiracy against me, then pick me up and bring me back here and sell me on block so that I can reproduce again for you.
What's
now, look,
about
you can't
that?
Tell
what's
me.
Here now and today. You
can't
there.
Tell me what this country
let's,
did. Look, if you want to trace it, I'll go back to House of Morgan. I'll go back to the Lodges and the others who actually, this very economic system here owes its life to the existence of slavery, and you're going to tell me that you don't owe me anything or that it was a liability? This country developed enough capital off of the existence of slavery. This is why they could defy England.
Both black and white, you know.
Oh, man, I don't know where you get... I suggest, really, that you read your Eric Williams.
Mr. Henry, Mr. Henry and Mr. Finkelstein, Mr. Finkelstein and I didn't want to be accused of not offering enough time. So, Mr. Henry... We're going to let Mr. Finkelstein kind of make his point first, and then you'll have a chance to answer him. All right, sir?
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Finkelstein. Go ahead, sir.
Well, these ideas aren't new. They were propounded by...
Well, the discussion now is not new. Our discussion tonight is the Republic of New Africa. Now, whether the theory that we are espousing or the theory that's being espoused tonight is new or old is not the question, all right?
Well, the idea was first expounded by a man named Ford and Allen, a book called Negroes in the Soviet America, about 45 years ago.
Oh, man, have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Cinque? He came over here, okay, go ahead.
Thank you.
Where are you going to start? Where do you get your nonsense from? Look, if you're going to come on here with propaganda to try to make this some communist plot, like so many white people make everything a communist plot, I'd rather not talk to you. If you want to talk about the urging...
Well, don't talk to me. Or if you want to talk to me for 3 hours, I want to talk to you.
Well, gentlemen, what we're trying to do in night call, we believe in dialogue. Now, we're not really here to try to find out who is right or who is wrong. The idea is that if you have an idea or a theory that we feel is of interest to people who are listening to 85 stations, we will listen to it. Now, Mr. Finkelstein, we don't want to debate now, but if you say the idea started 45 years ago, and Mr. Henry says that the idea is older than that, and although I may not entirely agree with the theory of the Republic of New Africa, I do know that the idea is much older than 45 years, sir.
Well, I would like to say this, that, I'm not... here to antagonize him, nor...
You can't antagonize
No, it's not
antagonize.
Well, sir, do you believe in the idea of an area of land for black people?
I believe in an area of land for the black people that want it. And I would, think that would be admirable. I think we have an area of land for black people at the present time with, many areas of the country with over 50% of the population... black people now.
Well, Mr. Finkelstein, let me explain what we're saying. We're not talking about something running under your government with your laws, with your limiting laws. Your laws limit and restrict our life. We are talking about a landmass in which we have complete control. Now, that means that we set up our own laws and we have our own government, you see.
Well, let me ask you something. Why
our own money.
Why in the world should you have complete control in a certain landmass area when the whites don't have complete control in the area that I live in?
All right, let's go again.
You said that you didn't think it would work.
Well, let's clarify one point.
It doesn't work. That's what you said.
Why do I think that? Because I don't think white people should be running my life or my children's life or my children's children's life, and it's got to end. And I have seen the history of this country is that there have been two separate nations in this country. One white and one black. There have been. In fact, there's two different sets of treatment for those people. The white nation has died. nation, has restricted it, has limited it, has made the decisions for it, has ruled it, has controlled it. Now, the reason I say that I have to have it is because I, as a man in this world, have a right to make a decision regarding my own life. And I might say that's one of the problems with black people in this country. We don't make the decisions regarding the distribution of the values that affect our lives. None of us. I sat on a city council.
Why don't you make the decisions?
We don't make decisions. We can't make any decision and make it stick.
These areas of government are open to you, whether it's...
Don't be nonsensical. You're not talking to somebody who hasn't sat on the government. I sat on the whole works, buddy. Sat on government. And I can tell you that when you're one person on the city council, I'll take, for example, out of seven, you are not able to make decisions that can be meaningful for your people. When you're 3 out of 21, you can't make the decisions. When you're 9 out of 453, you can't make decisions. You are not able to make decisions that count. Now, we are saying that situation cannot prevail forever because black people cannot be run by white people forever.
Mr. Finkelstein, I'm sorry, but we have to break for station identification. If it's short, sir, because I have to break for station identification. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I would like for Mr. Henry to get away from these intellectuals and go live with some Negroes and understand how they think. And I think that possibly he'd have a better insight of what's going on.
All right, sir. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Milton Henry, calling in from Detroit, Michigan, following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Milton Henry of the Republic of New Africa after station identification. Next week on Night Call, a card-carrying member of the establishment on the generation gap, a black Methodist minister on what Christmas means to the black community this year, a black educator on how to teach our 10 million black and white functional illiterates, and a former inmate of San Quentin on how to improve our prison rehabilitation system. Monday, social critic Maria Manis, author of They, a novel of the generation gap. Tuesday, we observe Christmas Eve by taking the night off. Wednesday, Bishop Roy Nichols of the United Methodist Church on the Black Christmas Day. Thursday, Dr. Cleo Blackburn of the Board of Fundamental Education. And Friday, ex-con Rick Clutchy on rehabilitating the rehabilitation system. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest Milton Henry, who calls himself the first vice president of the Republic of New Africa and says black Americans should be given as their own country 5 of the southern United States. Call Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And just before we begin taking some more Night Call listeners tonight, I just would like to kind of qualify our situation here. Night Call is carried on 85 stations across the country, and each night we get many, many calls, and we always regret that we can't take all of the calls, and the only way that we can try to get at least a small percentage of the people who are kind enough to call us is by limiting the calls. Now, it's always not our intention to ever cut off anyone, but if it does happen, it's certainly not due to our being rude or now not feeling that the caller's response is important, but only because we try to get as many calls in as we possibly can. All right, we'll start this half hour by going first to Arlington, Virginia. Mr. Reuter is hearing Night Call over WAMU-FM. Mr. Reuter, good evening, sir.
Good evening. I have a question for Mr. Henry. It has been said in some quarters that the Afro-American press, as a cause press, is dying in America. You said that the Republic of New Africa, the decision for this, would be of a self-determinate nature. Do you intend to use in any way the black press of America to get the message across to the blacks?
We intend to use every agency we can. Of course, we would hope to get the cooperation and support of the black press.
I have another question from a recent article in Esquire. It was said by one of the prominent Southern whites that Negroes do better when they're dispersed than when they are concentrated, economically and socially, because when they're together, they get frustrated from their own failures. Is this a pure racist view in your idea, Mr. Henry?
I don't think it has any validity whatever. And as a matter of fact, I think that when they see our government operate, we'll have failures like everybody else has, but we'll be able to at least be responsible for our own failures and not have somebody else hanging on our, pulling us back and aiding and abetting in our failures. Now, if we failed in this country to be good entrepreneurs and to get into business, the whole thing has been the system that's been pulling on our tails and not letting us get loose. Now, I don't know how anybody could make any statement about how we do better. I guess we would do better tied to in an exploitive racist system such as this, if we were tied to somebody's star who's a part of that system, rather than standing on our own where everybody's trying to do us up. And when I say that, I speak from the vantage point of having at one time worked in a bank and seen some of the problems that black people have in getting loans. And I also worked for a manufacturing company and had the problem of trying to sell the output of that manufacturing company in stores such as Wanamaker's in Philadelphia, where I walked in as a black to look at the buyer, black representative for a manufacturing company, and I found that, I guess it would be hard to work. When the white ones were the white output was being bought, and mine wasn't because I was black. So they've never seen an example of black people working on their own. But I'm quite sure that we will operate a successful economy and that we'll do very well. And I, for myself, know that when I'm around black people, I'm very happy. I feel all that frustration that I feel around white folks. When I'm in Africa, I feel together with myself. I feel that I'm not struggling against this awful thing that I find over in this country. This has been a horrible experience for most black people who want to come to themselves, to have to live in conjunction with white folks who are working their game on them all the time. So I don't think, I couldn't agree with that. And I think that that's a racist view, as that we black people, we must be less than everybody else in the world, and I think we're superior to other folks in the world, but we must be less. If we can't run our own government and our own thing, we got to have white folks with us, you know, before we'll do well. That's ridiculous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. Out to Pueblo, Colorado, Ms. Fahey is hearing night call over KCSJ. Ms. Fahey?
Are you Milton Henry?
Yep.
You're... talk on the radio has given me an impression. I assume that you are aspiring to be the first vice president of the Republic of New Athenity. Is that correct?
I don't quite get what you're talking about. Let me explain one thing about leadership. African leadership is placed upon a person, and this was done so in a democratic fashion. Each of the persons who serves within our cabinet accepts the serious responsibility of service within this. Leroy Jones, one of our ministers of culture, Baba Usajimanadufumi, another of them, Marlana Ron Karinga, whom you might know out there in the West. These men serve. Wesley Chui out of Dayton, Joan Franklin, NAACP lawyer who serves as our minister of justice. Now you see, these people serve with a great deal of a sense of responsibility, and I have that too. I have a duty to my people, not to white folks, to black folks. I am sworn to that cause, black folks' cause, not white folks. And I will not betray that trust. Now, whatever you say, however stupid you may be in failing to understand the yearnings in black men for freedom, I can't help that. That's your problem. You hang up.
Are you an African rather than an American?
I beg your pardon?
Are you an African?
I'm an African, yes.
American.
I am an African.
Were you not born and reared in the United States?
Unfortunately, yes. As a result of this terrible experience which you white folks exposed my people, my forebears, to.
Color does not...
I am not an American. I am not, nor have I ever been an American.
You do not believe in Americanism. You apparently...
Of course not.
Then by two...
Americanism? Of course not. I'm an African.
Don't believe in Americanism, and as I say, your republic is New Athenity, not New Africa, because the descendants of African nationality that I have met in my life do not have the attitude that you seem to have.
Well, let me tell you, don't be deluded by that. The Republic of New Africa is gaining more members per week than any movement in the United States. Now, you may not know it. You may not know it, and I'm sorry for you. That's your problem. But we happen to be taking in members from one end of this country to the other every week. Hundreds of members every week who are coming to us. Now, those blue-eyed blacks or Negroes, if you, I put them in quotes, which you know, I can't talk for them. I don't know about those folks. I only know about the black people who are coming to the Republic with a dream and a hope, you see, for their lives and their children's lives. And I am African, and along with a lot of other black people who've come to realize their African nature, their African identity, we reject you trying to make us into some kind of freak. We're nothing short of African. That's what we are.
The freak. You are freakish on your own attitude.
African, I guess so.
Behavior are the things by which anyone earns.
Burns. We have to prove something to you white folks. We're going to prove one thing to you, that we can take them five states. I bet you'll see that happen. That's one thing. You can see whether we earned that or not.
Ms. Fahey, thank you for calling.
I'd like to have some of your information to use in the novel that I am writing at the moment.
Oh, Lord, here comes another novel about us by white folks.
No, mine would be, and it would go toward people of your previous nationality, like Ralph Bunch. I don't know why there aren't more of you like him. He's a one.
We all have to be Ralph Bunch. A man with an intellect, a singular intellect, an unusual ability for anybody in this whole world. We all have to be of that caliber. Isn't that absurd? In order to justify our existence, we have to be Ralph Bunch.
Miss Faye, thank you for calling, ma'am.
All white people, nothing. You don't have two white people in this country equal to Ralph Bunch.
Miss Faye, thank you so much for calling.
All right, goodbye.
Thank you. Out to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Mr. Allen is hearing Night Call over WHAT. Mr. Allen?
Hello, Delcio?
Yes, how are you, sir?
Hi, Del, you remember me, Reggie Allen.
Oh, how are you, Reggie?
Okay,
nice to talk to you.
Well, I'm so happy to hear you're doing so well here.
Well, thank you, sir.
And I'm enjoying the program very much. And I would like to say hello to my cousin. That's my cousin in the line there, Milton Henry.
Hi, Reggie, how are you?
Yeah, how you doing, Milton?
Fine.
Okay, buddy. Look, only thing I want to say is just soccer to him, because what you're saying is very true. And
beautiful.
I'm going through the same ordeal here in this city. And I just wish that I had more power and strength out here, you know, to do what's happening, you know, the real thing.
Right.
And we're being, you know, really brainwashed. And just more power to you, and thanks very much. And Del, I want to thank you very much for letting me, you know, speak to my cousin. And Del, keep up the good work, okay?
Thank you so much, Reggie.
Okay,
thank you for calling.
Okay.
Out to Detroit, Michigan, where our guest is calling in tonight, Mr. Bettner is hearing Night Call over WJLB. Mr. Bettner?
Yes, good evening, Mr. Shields.
Good evening, sir.
And good evening to you, Mr. Henry.
Good evening.
Yes, sir. I'd like to say, sir, that I agree with what you are saying wholeheartedly in the respect of what has happened to the black man and to non-white people throughout the world in this respect. I don't know how this transition would take place of what you're speaking about, how the transition of the people who reside in those states now would come out, and they would not come out peacefully. There is no doubt in my mind about that. I'd like to know what kind of relationship would be taking place between, let's say, your nation and, let's say, the United States.
Yeah, well, we recognize their problems, and one of the reasons that we had our department, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, submit a diplomatic note to the United States government was so that we might discuss at this time, on a peaceable level, the means by which the transition can take place. This government owes us reparations. How in the world they could think that they don't owe us anything when they've taken our lands and our lives and virtually reduced us to almost perpetual...
Yes,
poverty looking on. Now, we would like them to discuss it with us right now, peacefully. Now, if they don't, of course, then we have to decide, as other men have decided, how are we going to free ourselves?
states.
Now, we have to pick those states, and one of the reasons we chose the five states there was because of the large numbers of black people that already live in the area. Now, taking it county by county, you go into Mississippi. Our problem has been in the past, everybody's been talking about, well, we could get power with the vote. But the truth of the matter has been that we've had to have power in order to get the vote. You've got to have somebody standing at a ballot box to make sure that your vote is counted.
Yes, sir. That's
now,
true.
If you had that kind of power in Mississippi, there wouldn't be a cracker in the Congress who's up there now. Not out of those states that are down there.
Yes,
there would have to be black folks. Now, we say that right now we have to change our lives and we have to take over those states. Now, in order to do that, it's very simple, because, frankly, we just move into an area. We've got millions of boys standing on corners now who haven't got the slightest hope of having a decent life.
Yeah.
And we bring them into the Republic and into the Black Legion, and they come to protect the land and the vote and the integrity of the vote within these areas. Now, when you go into Mississippi and you take some of these counties in the Delta, some of the areas where we have large percentages of blacks already, the question right now, they don't vote because they're intimidated. They don't vote because the votes are just thrown right out. But when we're able to supervise those polls, then we take over the sheriff in county after county after county. And we then have the power of deputization. So we deputize all these boys who come in, and we reduce this land to civilization. And of course, once you do that, then you're able to affect some real basic changes as far as the, you know, if you can take over government, even within the present structure, if the United States wanted to be recalcitrant about it, we could then begin our systematic taxation program to confiscate many of these things that we want to take over. As a matter of fact, the universities and the other things which we're going to take over, Old Miss and all of the university structures that are there, once we control the political life of the community, then there'll be no problem. We'll be the ones who decide on who's going to be the president. That's even within the present structure.
Yes.
Mr. Bettner, thank you for calling, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network. We'll return right after station identification.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Milton Henry of the Republic of New Africa after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call. They got their rights now. What else do they want? They is Black America. And those who impatiently ask this question are the majority of white Americans. But have they got their rights? Attorney Lewis Steele says a very emphatic no, and has been fired from his job as associate counsel of the NAACP because he says so. Steele says the Supreme Court has struck down only the symbols of racism while condoning or overlooking the ingrained practices which have meant the survival of white supremacy in the United States, North and South. Steele is a white man, and because he was fired for saying the nine men in black think white, his boss, a black man, the general counsel of the NAACP, as well as the rest of its legal staff, has resigned. Have the courts really solved the black man's problems? With attorney Lewis Steele, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself. Collect from anywhere in North America to guest Milton Henry, who calls himself the first vice president of the Republic of New Africa and says black Americans should be given as their own country five of the southern United States. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And out to Los Angeles, California, Mrs. Mobley is hearing Night Call over KOGO. KOGO, I'm sorry. Mrs. Mobley?
Yes.
Good evening. Your question, ma'am.
Hello?
Mrs. Mobley, your question.
Yes, I'm curious to know what's going to happen to my marriage and other marriages like mine. My husband is Negro and I'm white. Will I be allowed, and will my children be allowed to come into this new state?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to have a syncretic society within our state.
And will I be prejudiced upon because of my color?
No, but you sure aren't going to have any privileges within our society. You're going to be, and especially if you have black children, obviously,
your children are brown.
I beg your pardon?
My children are brown.
Well, I'm sorry that you were so offended by my...
I'm not offended. I'm just stating
I don't care what color they are. If the children are part black, then, and I assume we're talking in terms of the way we think of black as opposed to white, then you're welcome in our country. We're not going to intimidate you, beat you every morning, or do anything until you terrorize you. You'll be able to live in the society, but you won't have any privileges because you're white. And that's been one of the problems in the past. White folks have exercised privilege over black folks and thought that they had every right to do so.
I see. Okay.
But we certainly will welcome you. Now, if you want to come in and you want to work and you don't think that you're going to be offended because black people are running the government, well, you're perfectly welcome to come in. If you want to come in and teach black kids, that's fine. You can do that. You want to come in and help plan programs for black television, then that's fine. You can do that. If you don't take offense at the way in which we reorganize our family life, fine. You can do that.
You want to reorganize the family life?
Of course. We're African.
What is your method of reorganization? I don't quite understand.
We're going to make it possible for there to be no more illegitimacy, for one thing. We think that that's a very cruel concept. And if I went into that, it would take a long while. But Baba Thurjiman Adefumi, who is our minister of one of the three ministers of culture, has to do with the introduction of the African concept of family. And this, of course, would mean that our laws would be somewhat different. We would permit some practices which you might find objectionable, but we don't want you coming in there arguing with us about that. In other words, you come in, you have your thing. If you believe in monogamy, for example, you come in, you believe in it. But don't try to come in and influence other people who might believe in polygamy, you see.
Mrs. Mobley, thank you for calling now.
Thank you.
Thank you. To Bloomington, Indiana, Mr. Frederick is hearing Night Call over WFIU-FM. Mr. Frederick?
Good evening, sir.
Tonight
listening to an aircraft radio in my home and happened to tune in on WFIU on the FM band and was listening to Mr. Henry, who you are talking to from Detroit, and was very interested in the conversation. In Bloomington, Indiana, our Negro population is very small. And we have many Negroes in this community that, we've got two on the police force down here, one that holds quite a high position on the police force. We have quite a few that are involved at the Indiana University, both as Africans that have come in to teach their culture here at the university. And we've had very, very little and very few problems here in our city. The Negroes that we have in our community have worked their way up in some high positions within the organizations that they work, whether they be organizations such as the Radio Corporation of America or Westinghouse or Otis Elevator, and are very highly respected in the community.
By white people?
Yes, sir, by white people.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, one of the gentlemen, I will not use his name, that is on the police force, that is a sergeant on the police force, is in charge of one of the watches, is a member of the JC organization, which I'm also a member of.
What town did you say this was?
Bloomington.
Indiana? No problems, no race problems at all, and everything's going just well in Bloomington. Is that what you're going to tell me?
That's what I'm telling you, Mr. Henry, and if
well,
you don't believe
all right, then I can understand the kind of government you think would be satisfactory for most black people. In other words, the black people are satisfied in Bloomington.
As far as I know, they are. As far as I've seen, they are quite satisfied.
And this is the kind of insensitivity which has existed all over this country. You think that black people are pleased, just like the master sitting in the house talking about the niggas are satisfied out there. They all smile.
That is not what I said, Mr. Henry. I said that they are satisfied in the city of Bloomington, Indiana.
I understand what you said. What's the school down there at Bloomington?
You mean the university?
Yeah.
Indiana University.
Indiana, yeah. Now, I thought that was the town. Now, you weren't going to tell me that in Bloomington, Indiana, the black folks, they have no problem. Because you got two on the police force. Well, I'll tell you one thing. They got problems in Bloomington. And I would dare them to go to Chicago or come to Detroit. They're going to have problems in Chicago and in Detroit. You've got unemployment down there in Bloomington. And you've got problems for black people generally in Bloomington. And I doubt seriously if you've got any black people in Bloomington that are making any decisions that are effective in changing the lives of the rest of the black people down there.
Well, I'm inclined to disagree with you, Mr. Henry, and my personal opinion is I don't think you've ever been in the city of Bloomington, Indiana, and personally, I do not think you even know anything about the community.
I know Harvey Welch. You happen to be attached to the staff down there at Indiana University. I just wanted to ask you that question, and I'm quite aware of some problems down there which you aren't aware of. Mm-hmm. Also, we happen to have a consulate in Indianapolis. I am very well aware of some of the problems that you have in Bloomington. Whether you think I've been there or not.
I'm talking about Bloomington, Indiana.
Well, yes. How many blacks are in Bloomington, Indiana, Mr. Frederick?
I don't know the exact number that are here, but I would say that if I would put it in the form of a ratio compared whites to blacks, I'd say it's probably on the basis of somewhere in the neighborhood of around 7 to 1.
Where do they live?
And I am now taking the permanent population of the city. I'm not counting the student body, which represents about 1/3 of our population in the winter and during the school term.
Let's exclude the student population. Where do the black people live in Bloomington?
The black people live in a combination white-black community on the, it's the north west side of the town. I can't give you the streets that would give you the dividing line, but it's on the northwest section of town. There are also some, as a matter of fact, where I live, which is a recently new development that has just been put in Bloomington by the name of Van Buren Park.
So
there are three that live out here in the community. And
three of them, you can count
quite
them.
Well accepted.
And those three are well accepted out of the 40,000 or so that you got down there?
Well, yes, sir. Very definitely.
Yeah, and the rest of them live over there in the ghetto.
Oh, no, sir. I'm very sorry. I lived here in Bloomington, Indiana from 40 to 48 when there used to be a real ghetto. It was known as Pigeon Hill. And it was quite a disgusting thing to look at.
And
it was a combination. Let me finish, Mr. Henry. It was a combination of whites and blacks living in squalor. And that has been utterly cleaned out. There is low-rent housing that is available.
Low-rent housing?
Now, wait a minute. Let me finish, Mr. Henry, before you jump on my back. That is available if the people desire it. And the majority of the people that live in there are not blacks or whites. Because the majority of the blacks that live in this community, to put it down in that term, or if you want to use the term black Africans, if you wish, the majority of them are making more than some of the average white people in this community because they have earned the respect which they are given by the white community. And likewise, the whites have earned their respect in this community by sharing and getting along with one another.
Well, that's an unusual oasis in the United States. I think I better come back down there again, and maybe Harvey's being fooled by some of the things that he says, and he's teaching down there on the staff.
Mr. Shields, this is really
very odd, you know?
Mr. Shields has my address, and I would be most happy to meet you and bring you into the city of Bloomington, Indiana.
I don't want any special guided tour.
Oh, I'm not going to give you a special guided tour. I'll take you over here. I'm trying to think of the minister's name, church over on Rogers Street on the corner of Rogers and 7th, which is I can't even think of the name of the church offhand, but the new minister...
Is that a white church or an integrated church?
No, it's an integrated church, but the minister is colored. And he's just recently come to the community. The other gentleman was moved to another area by his church. And I would be more than happy to deposit you in his hands and leave him give you the guided tour.
And that should be the kind of thing I'm interested in. Look, if black people made more money than white folks made in this country, if that were true, in anywhere, let's take it as a whole, if that's your criteria, I don't think that's good enough.
No, I
can't
don't.
Measure life by whether we made more money than white folks.
Mr. Frederick and Mr. Henry.
I don't place the dollar.
Mr. Frederick?
Dollar on it at all, Mr. Henry.
Mr. Frederick, I'm sorry, but time has run out on this. Thank you for calling,
sir.
Thank
you, Mr. Shields.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and our guest tonight has been Mr. Milton Henry. And, Mr. Henry, I want to thank you so much for being a most interesting guest. And I hope you'll take Mr. Frederick up on his invitation.
I sure will.
And visit Bloomington, Indiana. It sounds like a very model community.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much, sir, for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, do the 9 men in black think white? With attorney Louis Steele, fired by the NAACP for saying they do. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.